We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Preseason's underway, and for more on that, we head to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. The great Jake Burns joins us now, as he does often when we're talking Browns. You can follow him on Twitter at Jake_Burns18, creator of Browns Film Breakdown, and all-around good guy. Hey, Jake, what's going on?
What's up, Jake? How are you, man?
I'm good. Let's go back to Thursday a little bit and just, you know, based on what you've seen from being out in Berea, let's start with this. The offensive line, are you starting to feel a little bit better about that group? Because that is the source of a whole lot of consternation. I think we're a little too worried about them. I'm pretty confident in that group. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking for holes, I think that's the place you would look offensively in terms of, like, if a situation arrives where, you know, things go wrong, I think the offensive line leads the position group side for the biggest probability there. So, I mean, I get it. I get why people are talking about it, kind of. But you have to understand that they were able to work this offensive line the last half of last year. And I know they've lost Kevin Zeitler, and that's a big deal. But at the same time, they were able to take that offensive line to being the second most efficient group to finish the year in Pro Football Focus's ranking. And really, they were the best offensive line the last half of last year. It wasn't even really close. So I think people get too caught up in the names and individuals when offensive lines don't play individually. They play as a cohesive group, and a lot goes into that in terms of quarterback feel, the way the quarterback's able to get rid of the ball, the schemes are able to help them with chipping. And by chipping, I mean a running back or a tight end able to help on speed, defensive ends. You know, there are a whole bunch of things that I mentioned yesterday, just a bunch of nuance that goes into offensive line play that I don't think people understand. It's not like four individual one-on-one matchups with a fifth guy there, too. It's like these guys play cohesively, and they do things like down blocking, different things that help the offensive line. And I think that they'll do well enough with it. I think that they're going to be, I predicted it all offseason, about the 15th, 16th, 17th best offensive line, and that's all they need to be. I think if you can get your offensive line to just be average and you have really, really good skill position talent like the Browns do, then, you know, you can be a really successful, you know, NFL franchise. And I think that that's what their goal is, to just maybe they'll invest in the offensive line a little bit more as we move forward. But for now, they think they have enough skill talent, and they think that with James Campen, what Freddie's able to do schematically, they'll be able to mitigate any of those issues and sort of help those guys like they did last year. And I fully expect them to do that. I'm not concerned until I have a reason to be concerned. Until I watch a game where those guys come out and just stink it up and cause a lot of issues for Mayfield and sort of the timing of the entire group, then I'll be concerned there. But, I mean, if you watch Thursday night, they played well in their one drive where they were all together. Eric Kush was your right guard. I think they played well. They protected Baker well. They gave him enough time. And I expect, not that the Redskins have all-world defensive line talent, but you got to do what you got to do, and we can only judge what we've seen. And I've been nothing but impressed with the group, and I have no reason to be concerned as of, you know, what is today, August 11th or something like that. So yeah.
Yeah, individually, you know, nobody on the Chiefs' offensive line blows you away, and they seem to do fine last year. And I think they got Pro Bowl nods for some of those guys anyways. Like, I think you make a great point as far as you have to judge the collective rather than the individual. And I feel like a source of a lot of the concern is Austin Corbett. You know, everybody just expected him to grab that right guard spot. Well, you know, he might not be ready. There's a variety of reasons that you might feel better off with Eric Kush as your starting right guard. And I also think if Austin Corbett is your backup center for the season, and if he's just providing offensive line depth, yeah, he's a high draft pick to, in year two, be providing offensive line depth, but that doesn't mean he's a complete bust. Like, Austin Corbett isn't going anywhere, and if he's your backup center this year, and then it takes him another year or so to turn into a starting offensive lineman, like, that's just the breaks with offensive linemen at times. Sometimes it can take a lot more time to develop. No, as far as Corbett goes, like, I'm not too worried about the fact that he hasn't grabbed that spot just yet. What about you?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I think people think that, like, you know, you draft a player at the top of the second round and he's technically a first rounder. They drafted it. Like, my understanding of how they went about drafting that position is pretty understandable. Like, they thought he could play, come in and compete at tackle. They needed a left tackle, right tackle. They thought he could compete there. He didn't end up being able to compete. So they moved him inside. And I think everybody thinks if a guy fails a tackle, they're going to be a good guard. Well, that's not the case. It's a completely different position.
Right.
It's a completely different drop and pass set. There's a completely different angle and type of player you're blocking in run game. You're blocking defensive tackles instead of defensive ends. It changes a lot of things for you. So it might not be a linear path. It might be something that takes him a little bit of, you know, time to understand the nuances of interior offensive line play, because when he played preseason last year at left guard, like he did next to Betonio, who they were trying at left tackle for most of the preseason, it was his first long period of time playing interior offensive line. I know in the Senior Bowl they had him doing a lot of it, but like, it's a process. And I think that everybody obviously wants him to win the right guard job, and it just hasn't happened. And it kind of stinks. It's kind of not what you want out of that guy. You would want to be able to draft him where they drafted him and slide him to right guard or center or whatever. But it hasn't come to fruition. Like you said, Jake, it doesn't mean he's a bust, but it is disappointing. But he's not going anywhere. He's still here. He's going to be, as it trends now, he's going to be the first rotational lineman on the interior, whether that's center or guard. And it's pretty easy to see that they think he's going to be the center of the future if they can't afford to keep J.C. Treader here. So that's sort of where it's trending. It doesn't mean that Corbett isn't a failure necessarily, but eating up 2 years of a rookie contract, developing a player, kind of stinks. But you hope that they can figure it out if Campen spends a lot of time with him this year and into next year in the offseason, that they can figure out a really good plan for him to be just a contributing part of this offensive line. Because like you mentioned, I mean, Kansas City, they had formed Cam Irving into something. They got something out of him, and I thought that was impossible. So you're hoping that the Browns can figure out a plan with Corbett. And I have faith that they will be able to figure out something for him, at least if not this year, it'll be into next year.
Yeah, and I think I feel like chalking up his rookie season, I mean, he wasn't going to crack the interior rotation as far as Betonio, Zeitler, and Treader went last year. It's important to keep in mind everything is new this year. James Campen is new. The offense is new. So you can kind of chalk up last year to just, you know, a lost year altogether. And then if you spin it forward, and if the best case scenario is he's your center of the future, well, he's probably going to see the field at some point this year, because Lord knows injuries happen on the offensive line. J.C. Treader gutted it through a high ankle sprain for a majority of the season last year. Maybe you have the luxury of trying Corbett in a spot like that if need be. And then, like you said, Jake, J.C. Treader's contract is up at the end of the season, so this could be the better plan long term. I'm not as worried about Austin Corbett as everybody else is, but like you said, it would have been ideal if he had snagged one of the spots, especially based upon where he was drafted. You did a great job with the thread of all your thoughts from preseason game number one. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and make sure everybody, you're following Jake on Twitter at Jake_Burns18. Tell me about Garrett Gilbert. I know you were very impressed with his performance on Thursday. I think they did some two-minute stuff yesterday, and Drew Stanton was working with the ones, so I'm not sure we're at the point just yet where Gilbert is your backup. But I'm starting to see it. Like, I think all three are going to make the team, and I'm starting to see it, Jake. Like, you know, if Baker were to go down, God forbid, maybe you throw Drew Stanton in that game immediately because you're comfortable with that. But if it's more of a long-term injury, maybe Garrett Gilbert is the guy that you game plan and feel more comfortable with as your backup quarterback. Do you think all three will make the team? And tell me what you've seen from Gilbert so far.
Yeah, that's great analysis. I do think Gilbert played really well Thursday. I thought he was on time. I thought his mechanics were pretty sound. He had some throws that were maybe not, it would be deemed accurate, but probably not precise, a couple of those throws. But mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's really hard for a quarterback, and that's going to happen occasionally. But I thought he was on time, seemed comfortable in the offense, dealt with a lot of pressure, and he managed. I thought he threw some really good quick throws when he was dealing with pressure that were accurate. So I left it feeling like exactly what you said. If Mayfield happens to miss in a game, if he happens to miss a couple quarters or something short, I think they'll plug Stanton in and hope that he can sort of put a Band-Aid on any of those, you know, cracks in the wall. But if it is something 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks, I think that they would try to come up with a plan for Gilbert. Now, you know, we've only seen one. The AAF turnaround for Garrett might have been a big thing, might have changed his mental approach to the game. It might have made him feel like he belongs. All of those things are so important for quarterbacks. It's all a mental battle. And as well as he played in the AAF and now translating that to Cleveland, you feel pretty good about that, especially the connection and the comfort he feels around Mayfield and Ryan Lindley talking about him yesterday. Those guys all feel comfortable around each other, and I think he feels comfortable here. So I do think if it was a long-term thing, they would probably try to – as long as he keeps progressing, Jake, that means he plays well the next three preseason games where he'll get a lot of snaps.
Yep.
And if they keep seeing that sort of – you know, good progress in the offense, being on time, on rhythm, and, you know, you're not necessarily in the quarterback room or on the field, so you got to be making the right checks, and he's making the calls fluidly. he's doing all those things. I'm sure they feel good about him. And, you know, just watching practices like I have, I felt good about him. And the game, I thought he played well, and he keeps doing those things. My thought was, and I said this earlier, and I wasn't really sure about, you know, making it too public, but I thought they would keep all three of them, and I thought they would dress only two. I thought they would dress him, and him being Gilbert, and Mayfield, obviously, and then have Stanton as a part of the non-active game day roster. You can't dress 53 guys on a game day, but he's on the 53-man roster in case they want him to, you know, in case of an injury or something like that. But, yeah, I kind of thought that they would do their approach to last year, which was dress two quarterbacks and then have, you know, your third guy on the 53-man sort of in street clothes helping out on the sideline. So that's what I thought. I think if Gilbert keeps playing really well like he has and sort of progressing in the offense, I think that's a point that they might get to where they just dress Mayfield and Gilbert.
Jake Burns with us. We talked about Corbett. I guess the only other negative so far anyways, or negative is probably a little too strong, but the only other guy that people have any level of concern about as far as John Dorsey's first two drafts as Browns general manager goes is Chad Thomas. And you gave a good film breakdown of what you saw from him in the Redskins game on Thursday night. Where's he at right now? What's the potential like for that guy? I mean, you know, again, you're talking about a third round pick, talking about a guy who, you know, told a fan that he was number one in Perea a week or two ago. There's a lot of questions around Chad Thomas, but certainly there's a lot of potential there as well. What'd you see from him on Thursday?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Chad's a big guy. I think the closer you get to him on the field, he's a really, really big presence. He's bigger than most people think he is. He just doesn't have a sort of what I call a quick twitch part to his game. He doesn't really play very quick reaction football. He doesn't really have a speed element to what he's doing off the edge. So I thought he played well Thursday, and I thought he did well with sort of some power moves and using a power move to spring himself free. And look, I think his ceiling is always going to be a rotational defensive lineman, like a second unit defensive end. And that's okay. Like, if he can provide some stability, hold down an edge in the run game and get after the quarterback a little bit, I think there's potential for that. Because there were points, especially last year, and sometimes in camp, like you mentioned his incident with the fight and causing the uproar with the fan, or the fans over there, is like, this guy's just a lost cause. So if he's able to become a second team defensive end who can produce maybe a couple sacks a year and 15 tackles and rotate in without, you know, being a massive decrease from Olivier Vernon, then like, that's okay. That's sort of in Cleveland, I think that is his ceiling. I don't think people should ever be expecting him to be a starting big time contributing end, but if he can be a rookie contract second unit defensive end, then that's okay. And I think that's sort of where he's heading, and I thought Thursday was a step in the right direction to feeling like he could be a productive rotational end.
Jake, I spent about an hour yesterday trying to project a 53-man roster, which is a fruitless endeavor. I would advise, do not do that after preseason game number one. But I have some news, Jake. Our Daryl Ryder reporting, the Browns have signed tight end Rico Gathers and waived Orson Charles. Tight end fullback. I mean, as far as the fullback goes, if that's going to be a role within this offense, Orson Charles is pretty much your only guy. I think they just signed a guy yesterday, Joe Carriage, I believe was his name, at the fullback spot. How do you react to that? I'll put you on the spot. Rico Gathers in, Orson Charles out.
I'm a little surprised because Orson was sort of, you know, he's been working with the first team at fullback.
And yeah.
I don't know if there was an injury issue there or something, but he was always a guy that everybody loved, especially last year. I know he got hurt the last five or six games, but, you know, he was a active part of, like, sideline. So, not that that means anything, but, like, you know, when the guy's hugging the coach first, and, like, he just sort of felt like a little bit of a team leader. So that, you know, I don't know. I haven't looked at it at all, but maybe there's something behind that injury-wise or something like that they decided to waive him. Because that's, to me, that's a surprise. That was a guy that I banked on the 53, so I don't know. I mean, I know they used Seth DeValve last year in a little bit of that fullback wing role the last half of the year when he was out, Charles, so maybe that's something they want to do. I'm not entirely sure, but you know, candidly, put me on the spot. My reaction is I'm pretty surprised by that decision.
Yeah, me too. And then Rico Gathers is a former basketball player. He's one of these guys. He's a great athlete. Never quite clicked for him in Dallas. How did you see the tight end position group filling out? I mean, I think Demetrius Harris, although he's been dealing with a concussion, is probably a lock to make the team as the backup. You got Farrell Brown in there. What's going on with the tight ends beyond Njoku?
Well, I thought Farrell Brown has had a really nice opportunity to capitalize on those, you know, reps that he's been getting with Demetrius Harris and Seth Aval both being in concussion protocol the last week. And I thought he had a good orange and brown scrimmage, but he was just, he was a lost cause in the first preseason game. So it's hard for me to envision, unless they love parts of Farrow's game in terms of off the field or, you know, his blocking ability that I'm not seeing. It's hard for me to think that he's a better option to keep over Seth DeVal. So I think it would go, obviously, Njoku Harris and then Seth DeVal, and then you probably find a fullback out of those two guys you just signed to keep between Gathers and, Carriage. I'm not sure which one of those. I haven't even seen them play, so I couldn't even comment on that. But I think DeVal is the third best option in-house. But that also, Jake, doesn't stop them from signing somebody that they are noticing in the preseason. And they're very vocal between John Dorsey and Freddie Kitchens that they're watching all 31 other teams. And, you're auditioning all the time. And they made all those moves last year and brought in two or three people to the 53-man that we didn't see coming. They signed off of waivers as the first priority waiver team. So that could happen again this year. So that third tight end might not be in Berea currently.
Before I get you out of here, how do you feel about the kicking battle? Are we starting to feel a little bit more confident in either of them?
Look, I don't feel confident in either of them, and that's not a knock on them. I just don't feel like they've shown consistency. Maybe they will. This is why they paid Mike Prefer the money. They pay him to figure out if they should feel confident, if they're projectable skills that are going to translate to consistency. I don't know, but I do know they should be on the phone with Baltimore. I know four teams have contacted them about this kicker they have. I could not tell you. It's like last name starts with a V. He's kicking the ball really well. He's done it two preseasons in a row. And he kicked a 60. I think maybe a high 50-yarder the other night.
Vedvik, Kare Vedvik.
Yeah, I think that they should be on the phone trying to see what they could do to get him in, because they're still unsettled. I know you used a fifth on Seibert, and I think Seibert's going to have every chance to win the job. But it's a cutthroat business with kickers, as we've seen over the past few years. And you need to get somebody in that you feel confident in. If that means you got to try to bring this kid in for a conditional pick in the end of a draft, and they should consider it, because they need to sort of solve this issue. And I will tell you that I do not feel, and I like both guys. They're good guys, and they kick the ball well occasionally, but it's not about occasionally. It's consistency. So I think they need to be as proactive in figuring out the kicking situation as possible.
Yeah, that stuff's got to be lights out. He's Jake Burns. He is lights out. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. It's at Jake_Burns18. Does a phenomenal job with Browns Film Breakdown, and he's the best. Thanks, Jake. I appreciate it, man.
I appreciate you, man.
All right, there he is, Jake Burns on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.